reconvene, and we are on item 7A, Chatham Valley Resource Conservation District.
That would be great.
So we're looking to stay on the conference.
Who am I looking for?
Rock.
Oh, good morning.
You can come right up to the podium if you'd like, just to let them know that that's what you're going to do.
Sure. I'm Rod Dowse, the district manager of the Chatham Valley Resource Conservation District, and our request today is to allow us to move our funds from the county treasury to a private bank institution, just to allow us a little more flexibility in our operational management, so.
Question?
I saw from the agenda worksheet, it looked like it was pretty much a unanimous vote from the Chatham Valley Board.
Correct, yes.
In this direction, and it's fine, yeah. I'll make the motion.
Second.
And that's the recommended motion, correct, on the worksheet?
Correct.
All righty.
Motion and second.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsa?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
Supervisor Pelt?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good, thanks.
That was easy.
It was easy, thank you.
Hope the rest of them are. Okay. Item 8A, Public Health.
We have Brenda Harris online today.
All right. Good morning, Brenda, are you there?
Battery 40%.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Brenda Harris, Deputy Director of Public Health. Good morning, Chairman and Board Members.
Good morning.
So, how are you guys today?
Great.
Good. Go ahead.
So I wanted to start off with the COVID case stats. As of yesterday, we had 73 active cases. We had 11 new cases yesterday. Total confirmed cases are 4,777. We had 4 hospitalized, 2 of them were in the ICU, and we have a total of 68 deaths. We've reported off 2 new deaths of yesterday. Of the 4 hospitalized, 2 of them are in the med-surg unit, one at Fairchild and one at Providence in Portland, and the ICU patients, one at Fairchild and one at Mercy Mount Shasta. We still are seeing a decline in the positive cases, which is great. Our current COVID vaccination stats, so we have a total of 19,591 persons who are fully vaccinated, or 43.5% of all of our residents, and that is 49% of the eligible population. We have 2,952 who are partially vaccinated, which is 7% of our population. 41% of our North County population have been vaccinated, 53% in South County, East County is 45%, and west part of the county is 35%. So by age, 4.2% are under the age of 18 years old. I do want to report that we have had five children who are 5 to 11 years old that have begun their series of vaccinations. We have 31.8% 18 to 49 year olds, 26.6% of the 50 to 64 year olds, and 37.4% of 65 and older. Fairchild Medical Center still has the state staff helping out over there. They have a 4 to 5 person state-funded team that continues to provide the monoclonal antibody therapy through November 27th. They're administering about 20 treatments per week, and for the total, they have administered 144 doses of the monoclonal antibodies since they began. The team is also providing COVID vaccination boosters 6 days a week, and Fairchild provided the first COVID vaccine pediatric dose yesterday. And they have a flyer that will be going out to schedule the future pediatric doses at their clinics soon. And public health, Efforts continue to increase. We are continuing to work with the Office of Education, the nursing director, to help support their vaccination efforts. We have sites identified, and we are in the planning stages of getting the clinics scheduled. We will provide COVID testing, continue to provide COVID testing here at the office on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 to 2. And this week, we have vaccinations being done at Weed at the COS campus from 10 to 1 on Wednesday. And then next week on Monday, we're going to be in Fort Jones at City Hall from 10 to 2. Tuesday next week in Big Springs at the May 10 store from 10 to 2. And Wednesday next week, we're going to be back at the Wairika Community Center from 1 to 3 doing vaccinations, COVID vaccinations there. And we are also continuing to provide flu shots. And that's all I have. Are there any questions?
We have one.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Good morning. On the monoclonal 140 that you've provided, that number, what's the results on that?
So as far as
recovery or what's the stats on that?
So they have administered a total of 144 doses of the monoclonal antibodies at Fairchild Medical Center.
Okay.
And this is to, you know, it has increased marked improvement in the number of hospitalizations and the severity of the hospitalization. People who
it increased that or decreased it?
Decreased the number of hospitalizations.
Okay. Thank you. All right. I thought I heard increase. Sorry.
Yes.
So it's been a positive result on the 144, is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. It has definitely helped out.
And then on the 5 to, I guess, 11-year-olds, what's the tracking on that? What data are we keeping track of? And is it with parent permission? Does the information go to their medical provider as well, or how does that work?
So if you're asking about how are we tracking the 5 to 11-year-old vaccinations, it's the same way we're tracking everybody else's vaccinations. It goes into a database, and these the CARE database, and the providers have access to that.
Are you tracking if there's any adverse effects from the vaccine at that age group?
Oh, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
How will that be reported?
Pardon me?
And how will that be reported?
So any adverse reactions are reported through the VAERS, Vaccine Adverse Reaction Reporting System, through the CDC. And then we always have the parents contact their provider if they have not already done so.
And how is HIPAA placed on this? Where does this information go besides the database? And who has access to that?
So this is covered by HIPAA. The providers have access. The patient's provider has access to this information through the CARE database. And then here at Public Health, we also have access to that information in our immunization program.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Brenda. I think that's all.
You're welcome. All right, you guys have a great day today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
County clerk, appointments in lieu of elections.
Good morning. So we're back again for appointments in lieu of election, and the only one that I have any update on is for the Callahan Water District. We have received a letter of interest from Linda Collins.
We'll move to appoint Linda Collins.
Okay.
Motion and second.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseth?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Help?
Aye. And what we're
we can continue this to our special meeting on the 16th.
Okay.
If we could, I believe we have, I have one left in my district, which is the Uvalde Fire Protection District.
Yes, the incumbent Patricia Kaka-Williams did not file and has not expressed an interest yet. There's also two positions in the Copco Lake Fire Protection District. That's in your district district as well.
Copco, I believe, does have a quorum, don't they?
They do. They have three people that were appointed last week, and then the two vacant positions. But if there's anyone that is interested to appoint, now would be the time to do it.
I haven't heard of anybody else from Copco, but I did get a receive a phone call from Patty Chashko-Williams, and she was interested in being reappointed.
To the Deep Valley Fire Protection. We can make that appointment today if you'd like.
Okay. So moved, Mr. Chair.
Second.
All righty. Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobbs?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Howe?
Aye.
I believe that's all I have in District 1, isn't it?
Yes, and then those two vacant positions at Copco.
We're lucky we have three here.
Yeah.
And so we'll figure out with special meeting then.
On the 16th.
So, through the chair. So with regard to in Gazelle and Grenada, if they are not able to find bodies to fill these positions, what happens? Does it go back to them or?
So in the case with Grenada Fire Protection District, because it's three full-term positions and if there's no appointments made, they're gonna fall below a quorum. And then it's eventually gonna come back before the board to establish a quorum.
Are they aware of that?
I don't know if they are or not. Typically what happens in the past with these districts, if they don't go to election or fill out their candidacy paperwork, the supervisors for the individual districts will reach out to the districts within their district to see if those incumbents were interested in reappointment.
Understood.
Yeah.
And I guess I'd like to change that dynamic. It's hard enough, but those are grassroots oriented, and usually they're the ones that know who's available or who would be good.
Yes,
versus
correct.
Myself, for instance.
Well,
so how do we change that dynamic so that
I think that
do this every time we have
every 2 years? Yes.
Yeah.
So there are several districts who realize and they'll admit that they blew the deadline. And so it's typically the week after candidate filing, they call our office and they're like, now what do we do? And that's when we say you need to reach out to your county supervisor and let them know that you're interested in being reappointed. And that list that we did last week or last time was a result of those districts that called and expressed that interest. You know, it's hard with the special districts because they're mostly volunteer positions. So I'm not sure how we can convey that message. Because they're notified of candidate filing and what happens if no one files.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So we'll continue this to the 16th then.
Okay.
Thank you.
8C, Social Services Division, Hunger and Homeless Awareness Week.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Sarah Tillard, Health and Human Services, and I'm joined today by Madeline Bryant, our housing coordinator, our agency housing coordinator. And we are here in recognition of National Hunger and Homelessness Week next week. And we've gathered some local data that we'd like to share with you prior to the resolution. So I'm going to turn it over to Madeline to do that.
Good morning, Chair Huff and members of the board. The purpose of Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week is to educate the public, draw attention to the problem of poverty, and build support for local anti-poverty agencies. Hunger and homelessness have a significant negative impact on the citizens of Siskiyou County. As mandated by the Department of Housing and Urban Development, Siskiyou County conducts a count at least every other year on the number of residents experiencing homelessness on a single night in January. The most recent count completed in 2020 revealed that approximately 311 persons were suffering homelessness on a single night in Siskiyou County. This count included many individuals from statistically vulnerable populations. Youth between the ages of 0 to 24 represented 20.6% of the homeless population. 7.7% were veterans, 15.1% were domestic violence victims, and 7.7% were families. Although this data is helpful, it is commonly considered an undercount due to the restrictive definition of homelessness used and the challenges of reaching this population. Furthermore, these numbers do not reflect the recent impact of the COVID-19 pandemic throughout the rest of 2020 and 2021. For example, the Siskiyou County Office of Education found that 383 students alone were either homeless or at imminent risk of homelessness during the 2021 school year. Hunger is even more prevalent concern. According to the Social Services customer database, between 7,000 to 8,000 people are living with food insecurity in a given month. In 2017, Siskiyou County had the eighth highest amount of children living with food insecurity in California. Various community, county, and city service providers meet monthly to brainstorm, develop, and coordinate solutions to the homelessness crisis. This consortium, known as the Continuum of Care Advisory Board, has provided housing stabilization services to over 374 individuals in fiscal year 2021, with the goal of addressing customers' immediate basic needs and increasing their self-sufficiency as soon as possible. We ask the board to highlight the needs of vulnerable residents by recognizing November 13th through the 21st, 2021, as Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week, and to support efforts towards reducing the impact of poverty in Siskiyou County. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you. I have a couple questions. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a definition of food insecurity?
So the statistics that we are using for food insecurity come from our CalFresh program. And, you know, it's a somewhat complex system, so there's a lot of factors that go into that. And as the housing coordinator, I'm not an expert on our mainstream benefits, but on our housing programs, but I'd be happy to bring that back to the social services department and provide that definition.
I'd like to know, with that many children who are in that category, I'd like to know how they get into that category.
We provide benefits through CalFresh to that number that Madeline mentioned, between 7,000 and 8,000 individuals per month within the county. So that is, you know, that's a benefit that's used for food. But we also work closely with the food banks around a lot of different issues, and they are members of the advisory committee for the homeless. And so they also have indicated that, you know, there's been an increase in uptake through the various food programs throughout the county.
So then it's more a matter of those that are getting assistance rather than
I think what's true often is that people who are on assistance run out before the end of the month of that benefit, and so then they are, you know, accessing additional resources through the food banks and the other providers in the county. And I know the family resource centers, and there's several entities in the county that are providing that type of support.
This came up at first five when I heard food insecurity. I thought, wow, there's not enough food up here. But it's exactly as Ms. Ballard has expressed, that it's that those that are on some form of assistance run out of food and are usually short the last 1 or 2 weeks of the month. And that's where that insecurity comes from. It's,
yes.
There might be a better term, I don't know, but it does sound like there's not enough food to go around.
Well,
there is the food. It's just, yeah, not everybody has access to it.
And then regarding the veterans that are homeless, what efforts does the county make to plug them into the veterans programs?
So we, you know, we work with the VSO, and as you know, right, there's not a lot of services in the county for that population, and so we work with them like we do any other population and try and coordinate with the VSO on, you know, helping them to access benefits through all of our various programs. So.
And I just want to add that in our homeless programs, One of the main aspects of it is to connect individuals to whatever services they may be eligible for, depending on their unique needs, because the homeless population, they come with different kinds of challenges, so we assess what they could be eligible for and connect them to community resources, other county resources, as applicable.
Okay. Yeah, I just hear, when I hear homeless coupled to vets, it triggers a lot of thoughts in my mind regarding there's programs for mental illness, there's programs for, you know, the VA has for drug and other substance abuse issues, those kinds of things that lead to homeless. I mean, there's a plethora of those kinds of programs, not necessarily in this county, but immediately to our north and south.
We work closely with the Continuum of Care for housing, and there are, you know, things like vouchers that come through that program that Madeline works closely with them to try and, you know, that target that population specifically. Sure. So we try and work all of those angles that we have available to us.
All right, thank you.
And on the advisory board that I mentioned, we include representation of a veteran, so that's one of the voting positions on the board.
One other question, maybe a second here. So regarding the vets then, I know one of the issues we have with veterans in this county is they don't register in this county as veterans. Do we make any effort, or does the VSO make any effort that way? The reason I say that is my understanding from years ago when working with the VSO and Tim Grinvick was that if we had more of them signed up as veterans in this county, then we would get more services here. So that, I mean, that's a major barrier, and it seems to me that we ought to be focusing on, you know, encouraging them to sign up with the VSO so that we can bring some more of these services here to this county.
I have heard the same, and that's my understanding as well, and I don't know, I mean, maybe that would be something that the VSO could speak to more directly. I know that several years ago, maybe five, there was a lot of interest from the Dom up in White City, and they came down. I think they provided the majority of the services, even though, you know, they're crossing state lines, and so there were efforts made to try and really coordinate and build that system, and we were part of those conversations, but it's not, you know, we don't have like an avenue really to do that outreach or provide, you know, those types of services, linking people or having people register. So
well, the real shame to me was that we're pretty close to the threshold of going to the next level of infrastructure for vets. We can't get there because the vets won't participate.
Right. It sounds like there's outreach needed, and there are ways that we can do outreach to that population, and so maybe that's something that I can coordinate with the VSO and support that effort.
I appreciate that. There's a lot of vets in this county.
I know.
And to have them have to drive all the way to Medford or down to Reading for everything,
I know,
is quite a burden, and all of take a few signatures to change a few things. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, we definitely do. Yeah, I will follow up on that.
Supervisor Chris, please.
Yeah, thank you. I saw we had No Place Like Home on the consent agenda today. And it's going to be a good benefit for wraparound services for folks.
Yes.
And down the road. That'll be finished in 2023? Construction?
Yes, May of 2023 is the target date.
All right, perfect. And then, there's another service, 211. The county's got it up and running. We leave 211 with folks that we meet, the card, or train that in for people's minds, 211, when we contact the homeless, so they can contact in their own time.
You know, that's an interesting idea. We don't do that. My understanding is that 211 has been up primarily for emergency services to date. And is there, is it wraparound? Yeah, so we actually were asked for data on all our different programs several years ago. I don't actually know that data is current. That's something that I should follow up and see. But that's a good idea, and we can certainly, you know, print that information up and distribute it as we're going out and doing outreach and during the pit count if there's one this year. And so, yeah.
Supervisor Valenzuela and I were at a CSAC conference, and the incoming president for NACO, the National Association of Counties, brought up, the 211. It's wonderful because all the departments have 1-800 numbers, but it's easy to forget that 1-800 number.
Absolutely.
At least that sheet of paper. And so 211 is just an easy one to remember, and people can call. I know they're trained, just like Supervisor Chair Hoff brought up. Someone says they're a veteran, boom, we'll connect you to these services. You're
right.
A widow of a veteran. Your child will connect you with those and those services.
Exactly. We've actually had some conversations with United Way about using 211 as a coordinated entry system for our housing programs, because that's something that we've been working to stand up, you know, coordinated entry, which is how people enter kind of the queue to get in the appropriate level of housing. And I know other counties, Tehama, I think, or Butte is using 211 in that way, and so that would be amazing if we can, you know, get that system in place when we get a little bit further down the road.
Right. Very interesting. 211. Thank you.
Thank you.
Move to. We've had so many conversations already.
Are you done?
I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
You
go ahead.
You're ahead.
I did. Go ahead.
You got it.
I got a hand up and a hand out.
So much to talk about here. Can't wait to go to Medford to see what programs they have to offer. We're scheduled to do that.
The 19th.
Yes. So that will bring some great information back for us to work on. Continuum of care is ongoing and moving forward. Never-ending conversations and more action is needed all the time with that program. More data, more work, more action. It's great to talk about things, but action is what's really needed. And no place like home. I can't wait. It's exciting to see that we were able to, you know, approve that today. It can't happen soon enough. There's so much work to be done. So many people that need help. Our constituents need to see forward progress. We need to be able to show that we're actually doing things. And I think there's a need for some kind of advertising or some positive outlook that shows our constituents that we are actually working in a positive way to help mitigate these problems. I don't think that this community knows what we do and how hard we're trying to make things happen, because it still looks bad. It still is bad. And I think we need to focus a little bit more on the positive side of what we're doing and what our programs are actually doing to help. It's hard. It's a sad situation, but we need to see some positive in it. If we could take one or two positive stories and put it in the newspaper every once in a while, and, you know, have some positive outlook on it, get to the Resource Center, have Michelle help with that, and just see a positive story every once in a while, I think people would have a different outlook on things. Maybe just a little.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
You know, just something positive about it. So I'll stop there. Thank you for all
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Chair, move to approve.
There's a typo that Angela kindly approved with the correction, which we will go back and make.
I know. Where's
the
correction? I don't have to review because I know you're
going to do
it. Where is the correction, though?
$1,771,000, and I'm not sure exactly where the error is, so I'll need to confirm.
Oh, okay.
Whereas, the last whereas.
Thank you. And you'll get a new original to me to get signed?
I absolutely will.
Perfect, thank you. Okay, Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Absolutely.
And Supervisor Hill?
Aye.
Thank you for your support.
Thank you. Personnel and the administration, item D.
Good morning, Chairman Haupt, members of the board, and the Davis County Administrator. Before you today is a memorandum of understanding by and between the Sheriff's Management Unit and the County of Siskiyou for a term beginning November 28, 2021 through June 24th of 2023. Contained within this MOU is the major aspect is that this group approached the county to discuss moving from the Laborers' Health to CalPERS Health, and through negotiations that decision was made. And before you today is the MOU that contains that change, as well as some other administrative type of changes in order to abide by and align with laws, rules, and regulations. So with that, if you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Any questions?
It looks fine.
Move to approve.
Second.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsa?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Haupt?
Aye.
Thank you.
All right. And I apologize, you had an introduction to make.
Oh, yes, I did. I would just like to introduce a couple people in the audience today. First, we have Anna Hendricks from our office, who is assisting with Chris, and she'll be able to help. But most importantly, we have Corey Sloan with us today, who is, for her senior project, is shadowing myself and wanting to learn more about county government. So we're super excited to have her here. So raise your hand, Corey. There she is. So we're super excited to have her and, you know, being able to learn all about government. So
welcome, both of you.
Yeah. So that's our future right there. So.
Which district is it? Always looking for members of the water district.
One of the fire board?
Yeah. I had the opportunity to shadow the city manager at Klamath Falls.
Ah, nice.
I was in high school, so watch out.
E, is this yours as well?
Yes, it is.
I believe so.
Yes, Chairman Haupt, members of the board, Angela Davis County Administrator. I am simply overjoyed today to make this recommendation to you. It is with regards to the appointment of the Assistant Treasurer Tax Collector, Jennifer Taylor, to the position of Treasurer Tax Collector, effective December 31st of 2021. As you may be aware, Wayne Hammer, our current Treasurer Tax Collector, has announced his retirement, so congratulations to Mr. Hammer. And he has done an incredible job with mentoring and training his assistant, who is Ms. Taylor. I personally met with her and discussed this opportunity, and she indeed was interested. And so I highly recommend this appointment for her and to her. And she not only meets the requirements that are listed for this position, because it is an elected position, but she exceeds those. So I am, again, just overjoyed to be able to recommend this appointment to you. If Jennifer would like to come up so that I can present to some and introduce to others, this is Ms. Jennifer Taylor, who is currently the Assistant Treasurer Tax Collector. So the recommended motion today would be to waive the Siskiyou County personnel rules with regards to recruitment, so that you may be able to appoint her directly, and then also to appoint Jennifer Taylor to the Office of Treasurer Tax Collector effective December 31st, 2021 for the remaining duration of the unexpired term, and approve granting authority to Ms. Taylor to invest or reinvest funds of the County of Siskiyou pursuant to Government Code Section 53607, and approve granting Ms. Taylor authority to continue with all existing contracts in the Treasurer Tax Collector Office. So with that, if you would like to move forward, and then we can have words depending upon where you go with this. So, questions?
I'm happy with the recommendation, yeah.
Okay.
I am as well, and to clarify for the public, this is a vacancy prior to an election, and then the position will be on the ballot when?
June. Correct.
Okay.
June of 2022. Yes.
Yes. Any questions? No.
I'll make the recommendation.
Okay. Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsa?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Hill?
Aye.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So Jennifer's modest. Wayne Hammer, Treasury Tax Collector for a little while longer. Anyway, Jennifer's a modest person, but she's an incredible employee, and the county's lucky to have her. She's not only really good with people, but she has tremendous technical skills. She saved this county a lot of money. She actually created the programs we use for TOT and business license, where a lot of counties buy these programs from companies like HDL, and they cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, and very professional program. She's also automated many things in her office. And she's probably getting tired of me saying, in case I get hit by a bus, which I've been telling you for the last year, to make sure that everything that I own. Well, I think the stage drivers are pretty good. So unless they're targeting me, I guess at tax time, it's all right. But anyway, Jennifer will do a great job. I have nothing but confidence in her. And she's got 17 years in the office, and the taxpayers just love her. I get comments all the time. And she's an extremely talented lady, and you're lucky to have her. So.
Great. Well, we got to get out there and sell you.
Jennifer Taylor, Assistant Treasurer Tax Collector. I just wanted to let you guys know that if I do get approved for the tax collector position, I have really big shoes to fill, and I will try my best. I will try my best to get it done. Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Chris.
Just as a compliment, I look forward to Ms. Taylor down the road, and as a compliment to Mr. Hammer, Ms. Pro is on the board. I told you this story. There was a widow in Butte Valley that her husband passed away. She was in financial straits, and she was scared, didn't know what to do. She spoke with you, and you walked her through the entire process. You had to hold accountable under state law, but you walked her through the entire process, and she was able to finish her life out with great peace. So. Your professionalism is wonderful. Thank you,
Jennifer. Jennifer's really incredible at that, too, working with taxpayers. We talk to them all the time.
Yes.
A lot of times elderly people lose their spouse, and they come in, and they're very confused, and we just try to work out a plan with them and do whatever we can with them and allow to help them out. Also, I forgot, Jennifer is fluent in English and Tagalog, which allows her to communicate very effectively with our Spanish-speaking citizens also. So. Very talented lady. Yeah.
Thank you for your service, and we look forward to more.
Yes. Thank you for giving my job away. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You won't be disappointed, I promise.
Did we vote on
that?
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Ms. Nielsen, I believe you have the next Forest Service soapbox.
40%.
I do. Elizabeth Nielsen, Deputy County Administrator. The item before you today is the schedule of proposed action for both the Klamath National Forest and the Shasta Trinity National Forest. The board has requested that this item come before you guys on a quarterly basis after the SOPA, as it is termed, is released. And so now with some additional staff in our office, we are able to focus more time on some additional areas of natural resources, which includes the SOPA and bringing it in front of the board. As the board is aware, we typically provide comments on forestry-related actions when we are prompted to do so, and when there's a large project that the board would like to comment on. This SOPA in front of you today is for the last quarter of 2021, and so the next SOPA would be released in January of 2022. Which we will, once that is released, we would bring that SOPA in front of you, the board meeting immediately following that release. There are some projects, if you've had a chance to look through the SOPA yet, there are some projects related to forest health, thinning, prescribed burn. There's also some projects related to grazing. And Anna and I will meet to determine some letters of support or letters of comment that we will bring in from the board on a consent agenda. But I'm happy to talk offline with board members on any other projects that we should be commenting on. And I just wanted to also thank Anna for all her work on this and reviewing the SOBAs and identifying some of those projects. And so with that, you know, we will bring this as an informational item in front of the board and then seek direction to provide letters of comment in January. I'll probably have a more robust just outline of the specific projects that we would be commenting on. But like I said, we will bring some letters of comment and support to the meetings in December ahead of the next release of the SOBA, and happy to talk with board members offline of projects that they would like to provide comment on. I'm open to any questions.
I have one. And you may not know the answer to this a little bit, which I'm spot on the locatable mill mining rule. It says it's on hold. Was that started under the last administration, or do you know if that's under the current administration?
I do not know the answer to that, so we will look into that, and I can bring that information back in front of the board.
Yeah, one of the things I'd be curious when you try and get some answers is whether or not this is going to trigger a land management plan revision.
Yeah. I will certainly.
And if it does, we need to invoke coordination when it comes to the revision of land management plan.
Okay. And you know, I should have mentioned this at the beginning, just one piece for the public so that they're aware of. The schedule of proposed action that the U.S. Forest Service releases for each forest provides the public with information on projects they're initiating, projects they're in the process of, and projects they've completed. And so every quarter, the public can receive a full update of all activities occurring on the given forest. So.
Brother Chris?
No, thank you. Back in the late 80s, the sucker fish were listed as endangered. The 13 comments for, no comments against. And you see how that's impacted the climate base.
Yes.
And so I'm glad we're doing this to Val comment and speak on behalf of the county. The reason why I asked for this to be on the agenda was Rick Costales, used to be Natural Resources, used to be this for quarterly for letters. I didn't look through it, so if it's all right to view it for board discussion, just throw out the stuff I think we should be commenting on, if you're finding that. The Bradley fire.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to stick to just District 1, so I didn't jump into anybody else's. It's from my central district. The Lauren McLeod fuels.
Yes. Yep.
I think some of these could be up. They don't have to be masterpiece letters, just letters of comment.
Correct.
And then probably can carbon, you know, cut and paste certain basic arguments. The fire guzzlers, or the guzzlers.
And we've already, the board approved a letter of support for that one at the last board meeting.
Oh, way to go.
Yes.
Great. Cool. I voted yes on that one.
You sure did. So that one has been submitted. All right. Supervisor Chris.
Well, that's humbling. and then, you guys are being revised wonderfully. I think along those lines, too, like the guzzlers, the deer plan, the county deer plan that Supervisor Cops have worked on all those years, I think if you could make yourself familiar with the deer plan, I think we have opportunities where that can be used as background information for comments on stuff. The lava fire?
Yes, I have that somewhere.
The Mount Shasta Ski Park, we have a parking lot expansion proposal that, you know, tourism, those sorts of things could be a big impact. I'd be happy to work with you on that one if you want to reach out to me, and we can reach out to the ski park. So feel free to call me if you want me to do anything for you. And then the Nordic, I think it looks like it's moving over to SOAR. But no, what was that? The Laurel Harkness Group.
That's SOAR.
Yeah. SOAR. Looks like they're going to be taking over, not ownership, but management of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would defer to Valenzuela on that one. I believe it's in this district. But we wanted to do a letter of support for SORA. So now we're partnering with, and we've already contributed financially to the group. And then for the, I had an email I was going to send you, I forgot to email it. For the Klamath National Forest, for the horse thief grazing allotments, I think our grazing policy, We had talked about this before, Supervisor Haupt, years ago. We haven't done a new forest management plan yet, so we need to submit this to each grazing proposal until they at least get that adopted.
As they go through the NEPA.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're always facing litigation on this.
And then if we already approved it, that's great. But the Rimrock waterline replacement in Clam National and the Goose Nest. And I think it's for wildlife as well as livestock.
Mm-hmm.
That might be an adoption from the Siskiyou Deer Plan or the grazing policy.
Yes, and
we may have done a letter of approval already.
We have not done a letter of approval. We had that one. We had that project highlighted, and so we can certainly comment on that one.
So I'm hoping, I'm not being a creative publish more work. I'm hoping these are basic guidelines to, with some specificity, but there'll be masterpiece letters, just letters that state our viewpoints and provide public comment from the public on important rules.
So I would say in general, relating to any Hills project, the county would support that. I mean, I'm speaking for all of you, but let me know if I'm wrong here. And I would draw attention to a prioritization process that is a project associated with a larger effort that Cal Fire and the timber companies have developed in concert with the agency, and then prioritized based on its proximity or protection for communities at risk.
I know this isn't offline, so sorry to keep you going on this, but the South Fork Sacramento,
yes.
Carolyn Napper has done fantastic work all in her region, off of 89 and up into the East Side Project as well. So she's heading this one up on the South Fork Sacramento. I think it's coming up in January for final comment. Obviously, a support letter for that. But I guess I want to underscore as well how we track this. If the Forest Service gets litigated on any of these projects, this board in the past has filed amicus briefs in support of the projects. So we want to stay on that track so that we don't lose some of these projects that are actually getting done.
The previous forest supervisor for the Klamath National Forest would reach out in those situations, and so I wrote this down. I think it would be great to meet with Rachel Smith and just outline that to her.
I don't know that it's on either of their radar screens. I've tried to talk to them, both about that and how important that is to the forest, but we're always the last one to call.
Yeah,
and I would. Welcome, maybe even a reminder in our letter of support to them that we also support them should they encounter litigation challenges.
Agreed.
Anybody else?
Thank you.
What do we need on this? It was just direction.
It was just direction, okay. So I've received my direction.
You got plenty of it.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to recess as the county board and convene the Flood Control and Water Conservation District. This time for public comment. If there's any public comment for the Flood Control and Water Conservation District, please raise your hand so you can be recognized. I see one hand up. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, can you hear me?
Yes, we got you.
Okay, I'll make this quick. Rich Marshall, I'm the rancher out in Fort Jones, and I attended the meeting in Fort Jones at Sigma, and I had three questions I asked there, which never got responded to. The first was 170% increase in required flow at the Fort Jones days over the previous number. No one had an answer for that. Dr. Harder's comment, he didn't know anything about the dedicated 60,000 acre feet, part of the climate compact, and he wanted to know more about it. The third question I asked was the county appointed attorney, I think his name was Eric, had no knowledge of special provisions AB 2121 granted to Siskiyou County under Schedule B of the Water Code. And I think all three of those are really important issues to be dealt with as part of the statement questions, because that's what the issue was, that was what the discussion was about. And I was prepared to go talk to them, and I was trying to coordinate to Matt Parker on meeting and talking to those fellows who wanted to have more information. Anyway, that's my, that's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Through the chair.
Yes, sir.
I can answer that, some of that question, Matt Parker, Natural Resources Specialist. I can share that staff is currently looking into those items, and at this time we don't have, you know, all the information we needed to adequately respond to Mr. Marshall's questions.
Okay, I look forward to those answers when they do get them. I see no one else online, so.
And then before the presentation, I'll be recusing myself and just a bit of discussion.
Are you bringing anybody in, or is it just you?
I might have somebody in, but I'll have a couple of presentations. But... good morning, board members. Matt Parker, Natural Resources Specialist, managing the Sigma process. As Chris brings up the few slides I have, just a reminder, we see the finish line of these groundwater plants. December 7th is our big day. And so I thought this would be a good time, a needed time to, one, bring just a general update on the upcoming schedule and processes, but also provide a quick update on the public comments we received on the plans, as well as how we're handling appropriate responses and adjusting the groundwater plans as necessary based on those comments. Before I start, I wanna thank and acknowledge a couple members of our team that are on the phone, Dr. Laura Foglia and Dr. Thomas Harder from our technical team. I believe they're on the line, as well as Katie Duncan from Stantec, our facilitator, who I will thank, really thank here in a few minutes when I talk about the comment response. So with that, next slide, please. So here's a brief look at kind of the ongoing events and upcoming. Our public comment period on our drafts closed September 26th. We had advisory committee meetings the week of October 26th through the 28th, where we provided some responses already to the comments we received from the public. Not all, but some, and I'll get into that in a minute. Today is November 9th, an update, as we know. In between today and December 7th, the technical team and staff will be working on finalizing the groundwater plans and building appropriate comment responses that will be included in those plans for the public to see.
Excuse me, Matt. Yep. Can I ask the council a question? I'll put you on the spot here. So, public comment period ended September 26th. I know in federal law, NEPA, officially it never is able to close until there's a decision. How's that treated in state law? Or for this process? The precedent underneath is that you have to continue to dialogue right all the way until there is a decision. I'm not sure of this process. I have some constituents asking me that question.
Yeah, I'm sure they can still submit public comments. I don't know if Natalie's the one who's actually heading it up. I don't know if she's available to speak to the issue, but my understanding is they can continue to submit public comments.
Okay, underneath, but they do that as well, but it may not be in the actual document itself from a response standpoint, but you have to consider that as public comment. Is that the same under state law?
Yeah, and I'd have to double check that. I would encourage constituents who wish to comment to submit their public comments, and I'll have to look as to what the ramifications are, but my understanding is that you still have to consider it.
Okay.
What's up? Natalie, she's raised her hand.
Hi, Natalie, can you hear us?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, so
In regards to the closing of the public comment period, at the close of the public comment period, those are all the comments that staff and consultants will be preparing a response to comment to. Persons obviously are, you know, free to comment to the board after that period, but they would not be included in our responses to comment.
Okay, it's the same then. So I understand it. Thank you. Sorry about that.
No, that's all right. That's a good question, because we get lots of comments or questions about how and when they can respond. And as you see here, after we submit the plan in January, or whenever we submit all the documents, DWR has some processes that they do, and then they open up a 75-day public comment period where the public and our stakeholders can provide comments directly to DWR, and DWR looks to us, the GSA, to assist with explaining, I guess, anything pertaining to that comment. Again, DWR has 2 years to review the plans to either pass or fail. But in the meantime, April 1st, coming up around the corner is when our yearly report is due. Next slide, please. So the public comments we received, two commenters for view, 67 specific comments between those commenters. 17 commenters for Scott Valley with 772 individual comments, and 13 commenters from Shasta with a total of 385 individual comments. I should give a heads up that some of those are in duplicate form. Question?
Yeah, so what is it? Go back and find that again. 13 commenters,
yep.
But in those 13 you have 385 questions, is that?
Correct, yeah, so.
So one might have 50, another might have 40.
Right, exactly.
Okay,
yeah. So what I meant by commenters was an individual or an entity.
Okay.
Yep. And some comments came in a couple forms. Some came in more of a form letter, and others came, used a template form we had where they could specify a line or a section in the plan and comment specifically on that. So we received these comments, and through the great help of Katie Duncan and the StanTech facilitation team, they organized these comments into an Excel spreadsheet that we're calling the public comment response matrix. It was a lot of work. It was a lot of great work that I would not have been able to do on my own, so that work was greatly appreciated. And so once that was organized into the spreadsheet, they, as a team, we went through and categorized those comments. Actually, you can go to the next slide, please. Into three categories or groups, whether it was an A comment, meant it was a significant comment, whether it's technical, policy, or legal. B comments were a little less significant, but still as important, and C comments were editorial in nature. And as you'll see in the next slide, an MCR is what we call the multi-comment response, where if there were multiple comments on, say, one particular item, let's say public trust, we didn't go and have a specific answer to each public comment. We developed with legal consultant and the technical team a sort of a unified response to that subject in general. So next slide. So here's the example of what we put together. I won't go through it all, but this just sort of shows you the...
I don't know why it keeps tuning back. I apologize here.
So here you'll see the spreadsheet. You see we have it categorized. The commenter, the group there, the third column is whether it was an A, B, or C, the comment itself, and then over to the right, and I know this is really small, you see the response or recommended action. That is where our comment response will be inserted for the public to see in the groundwater plan. So in this case, we have a multi-comment response number 4, and so we'll have a master sheet where within the document you can go look up that MCR number 4 and see the adequate response instead of trying to shove it into a small Excel spreadsheet table. And then over on the right, you can see if there was specific to a section, chapter, line in the plan. We, during our advisory committee meetings, we provided this spreadsheet to the public. We reviewed with the committee and the stakeholders all of the A comments. We had legal consultant on the line provide a verbal response or support to why we were doing certain things within the plan. It allowed discussion between the committee and staff and the consultants. And so those went very well. If you go to the next slide, please. What's next?
No idea. Okay. Thank you.
These were a lot of, or these were some of the more discussed topics between comments received and then discussions during the committee. Public trust, ISW thresholds means the in-stream metrics that is required under SGMA, Endangered Species Act, the application with the State Water Board's emergency regs. A few projects and management actions were discussed, implementation and budget, and then data gaps that the GSA will look at moving forward. I have in their oppositions to GSP, that's sort of a little too strong a language, but and what I meant by that was that, you know, not everybody was 100% agreement with everything in the plan as expected, and so we had various degrees of, you know, disagreement or pieces in the plan that they did not like. Those were expressed to us. It's recorded in our documents, and you know, we're not going to be able to have everybody agree with everything in the plan. So I just wanted to make that note. And so finally, last slide. As I said at the beginning, the team staff and the technical consultants are finalizing the GSPs and working on the comment response. And we're hoping to get those posted publicly on the website and to you all prior, at least a week or possibly 2 weeks prior to the December 7th public hearing, in which you will take that item to either approve or send back to us. So with that, I will stop there if there's any questions.
Just a reminder, time frame, you'll be getting that public hearing info to me soon, right?
Yes, very soon. I will get that to the clerk very soon. It's in draft form. Questions?
So on the 7th, if we don't accept it, what's the drop dead date for submitting to the state?
January 31st of 2022.
Oh, okay.
So that's why we worked really hard to give ourselves adequate time in case there was a hiccup. We have time to adjust and get that. I will say that a frustrating part of submitting the plan is it's not like you drop the plan in an email or a Dropbox. DWR greatly told us to submit the plan in pieces, which is not user-friendly. So we have to pull the plan back apart and submit it in various ways, which is very frustrating. But as DWR's choosing. So it takes a little while to just pull it apart and submit it. It's not just drop your email and away it goes.
Can you go back to the previous slide? So how will we address, I know it's coming up, but and I know it's in the plan, but it's, basically the groundwater recharge for these basins that we're trying to keep intact. How's that? How will we address that? What's?
And I guess maybe be more.
Well, specific. We have to show that these are sustainable, right?
Right.
But if we don't get recharge into the system,
right?
They won't be, but you know, practically these will be sustainable.
Correct.
Unless there's a source of water removed. So how do we address that in the plan?
And so it's described in the plan that in general, all three of our basins are sustainable as we speak right now. Right. So that's described in a lot of technical language that, you know, the plans are sustainable as we sit right here. Here's the actions we will do to maintain that or improve on things like perhaps in-stream flow as it relates to the Sigma area and groundwater pumping is where we'll say we'll look to improve on certain aspects of that where we have jurisdiction.
And then we heard last week from the Water Board that the Endangered Species Act, basically they can kind of pick and choose what species they want to protect. So how does that work in our plan? Is ESA something that are we overall species or single species? How does it relate to our plan?
Yeah, I will answer that because we don't have the legal consultant on the line who can explain it. Basically, we felt that, and we answered the question as according to the Sigma requirements, we're complying with those requirements. So everything in the plan is up to speed, up to code with what Sigma has required in the GSA to do in terms of accounting for endangered species.
Thank you.
No more questions?
No.
Okay. I don't know if there's any further public comment or not, but thank you.
No, we're good. Cool. No, we got two new ones.
Are you ready?
Yeah, go ahead. Good morning. Hello?
Announce the name.
Mr. Simpson, you can unmute it. Your turn to speak.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, we
okay.
Hear
you. Yeah, I have, good morning, and thank you. I have three questions here for the gentleman speaking about the Sigma. First of all, I'd like to know, it's unclear what the criteria for determining comments, the categories A, B, C, and M, R were. That's number one. Number two, I'm kind of wondering, are county constituents, landowners, ranchers, irrigators, are they underweighted compared to minority consensus collectives? Like I noticed on slide 5, you have Cal Trout, which, you know, Cal Trout, their constituents and their membership are largely outside our area. A lot of them are even outside the state. And so they tend to weigh in on these things extensively. And so if local landowners who pay the foot the bill here for this county are underweighted in this comment and overshadowed by people like Cal Trout, I don't think that's fair. And they don't have any skin in the game. So I'd like to hear how you look at that. And again, how this whole thing is weighted as far as comments. Thank you.
Sir, can I get your name for the record, please?
William E. Simpson II.
Thank you.
So briefly, you could answer my questions that were just posed.
Sure. So the criteria was it was basically a lot of discussion between the technical team, consultants, and staff, in that heavier weighted comments were based on the amount of times we received that comment. So if we heard it one time versus if we heard it 10 times, the one that we heard 10 times was weighted more in terms of when to classify as an A or a B. And then also in terms of if anything was legal or policy related, it was obviously going to be something that would take some time to address that was classified as an A comment. As far as the second question, I just used Cal Trout's little section of comments as an example because it showed, you know, the multiple ways we used the Excel spreadsheet. As the board knows and the public, we had advisory committees set up for each basin. Those were made up of local stakeholders, which included irrigators, environmental representatives, tribal representatives, residential representatives, and municipals. And so we had a lot of stakeholder participation during committee meetings and just commenting in general.
All right, thank you, Matt. We have another caller online.
Caller ending in 5682, you may unmute, it's your turn to speak.
Good morning.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, this is Theo Johnson. I was going to sort of echo what the last gentleman called in about, you know, it's frustrating as kind of a representative of a regulated community that none of our comments made it into Category A. We were all considered editorial Category B comments. And, you know, it feels like we just don't have scary enough lawyers to make, you know, the team, the tech team, or whoever was in charge of categorizing us, to make us afraid, to make them afraid of us, I guess. To Matt's point that it depended on how many times they heard a comment, well, you will recall that, you know, I sent in one set of comments with 42 signatories. So does that count 42 times? I didn't have every one of those people send in a copy, but, you know, they still wanted to be counted. So that was just a frustration we had. And, yeah, we are the ones with skin in the game. So I don't know, you know, I think that you will work to make improvements, but it was frustrating in the advisory committee meeting setting not to have discussion surrounding our comments. So, thank you.
Thank you. For the caller, as a decision maker, I know for my process will be to look at the commentor, how the comment was treated in the plan, and whether or not it was significantly addressed as it should be, and whether or not the plan supports the activities on the landscape. So, with that, thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for the update, and we'll see you back here on December 7th. We'll adjourn as the Flood Control and Water Conservation District, and we convene as the Board of Supervisors, County Clerk appointments.
Yes, this is our annual appointment to the a delegate and an alternate from the Board of Supervisors to the Rural County Representatives of California, RCRC, that would be the Board of Directors for 2022, and also related to that is the Golden State Finance Authority, the GSFA Board of Directors for 2022. Last year, in December, Supervisors Cobseff and Haupt were appointed as delegate and alternate, respectively, to each board to represent 2021. We are now looking for 2022 representatives.
And I'd like to continue as a delegate.
As well.
So moved. The point is second.
Oh,
alternate.
That's more difficult.
So we have Cobseff and Haupt again for 2022. And who was the second?
Nancy.
Thank you. All righty. Supervisor Chris.
Aye.
Supervisor Cobseff.
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Haupt.
Aye.
Thank you.
And I think that's everything.
Urgency. You had the urgency.
Oh, I have an urgency. Sorry about that. Forgot my own item. Ms. Nielsen. So I guess there might be a little bit of discussion. What I'm concerned about is what I heard from the Water Board last week. And what I heard from them is that regardless of what happens going forward, they were not going to lift the curtailments until the governor lifted the statewide declaration of emergency, which is ignorant at best, I will say, on the record, from the standpoint of how geographically large the state is and how different the weather patterns are in the North State compared to, like, Los Angeles. With that said, I know at this point, Scott at least has met the standards that were put in place because of the curtailment. The goals have been met, if you will. It's time to lift it because in relation to livestock watering, for one thing, there's an enormous cost to my constituents in having to pump groundwater, which, you know, conveniently the water board likes to think is connected to the river anyway, versus a diversion, to water that livestock, and the tremendous cost is the additional pumping costs associated with either diesel or with the electricity. It's time to pull that and let's get back to doing business. We've had significant rainfall even since last week and significant snowfall in the mountains. I didn't check the river level this morning, but it was well over 300 CFS last week, which is significantly above anything, any goal that the water board set. So I'm urging that we write a letter to that effect that enforces the most encourages in the most aggressive language I think we can come up with to lift these curtailments and quit depressing our ranchers. And I'm open to the other districts as well, but I don't know the watersheds and what the response has been with the storms. That's why I brought the Scott before you.
Yeah, I'm not positive on the Shasta. I know the presentation, they were going to store some water in Lake Shasta and Dam and those sorts of things.
And they are.
They are, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with what the thresholds were for the two watersheds, I would say. So, maybe you two are.
I think I'm going to read the State Water Board tweet here on October 30th. As storms move towards California, the State Water Board may suspend curtailments before storms if projected rainfall shows sufficient water to meet minimum flows, temporarily suspending curtailments and enabling right holders to collect water for storage. So we are in winter. I think the minimum, is, at least in the scope that you know you've identified, is way above the minimum. The only thing that I guess I would add in the language, I know that they talked about last week, essentially still holding the curtailments on leaky ditches, and I think that that's kind of absurd during this time of the year. That's part of the groundwater recharge. I get it if it's, you know, in the summer, that makes a lot of sense, but right now, I don't see where it makes any sense at all. So I don't know how you want to tee that up, but some of these ranchers and farmers need relief from that curtailment. For livestock watering at a minimum, so.
Correct, and so it was brought to my attention yesterday by Chair Haupt that there are, he has identified ranchers in the Scott Valley who are hindered in providing an adequate water source for their livestock, and so we will be sure to identify that in this letter and reach out to those landowners as well. I will discuss with Mr. Parker if he's heard anything from ranchers in the Shasta Valley that are facing the same issues. But that aspect will certainly be called out in this letter if the board approves drafting of it.
I can help you with the list. The other thing I draw some attention to is that this time of the year is when our sustainable groundwater model shows us recharging the Scott, and if we're prevented from doing that with this curtailment, then the consequences are likely dire this next summer.
Yeah,
agreed.
It will exasperate the whole system.
Agreed. We should be utilizing the precipitation that we're receiving right now, especially given that we're going after additional water storage, but during a time that we don't have that. Use any tool that we can to store and utilize that water.
Yeah,
appropriate.
I know there's been water going out. Because this is critical time, I would be receptive to approving a form letter in which Shasta, when it is met, that letter be sent, when the minimum thresholds be sent. Because we could have 2 weeks between the board meeting, and that could be critical time. to for several factors. I won't list them all. And so I hate to miss any time we could have on something. I know back in 2000, I can't remember the last week when we voted on, but back in 2014 or 15, we had the month of February was critical for the water irrigation district and filling up Lake Shasta Dam. So I'd hate to miss 2 weeks. So I would like the idea. You guys are both looking at me, it only makes sense. We meet the minimum thresholds that we send that letter and that we have approval to send it on that date.
And is my understanding that the request in front of the board today is to draft the letter, at least with Scott, and submit it to the State Water Board immediately, and then we would, at the same time, we will look at Shasta Valley, see if those are met. If so, we can include that in the letter.
The suggestion, since we have a special board meeting, that'll give us some time to research the other two basins and bring that back to us.
Great reminder. I forgot about the special board meeting.
Good, sir. There are curtailment orders still, I think, on the leaky ditch part of the Shasta as well.
I agree. Yes.
And just a reminder, we're not here on Thursday the 11th because of the holiday, so that will kind of a tight squeeze for the agenda.
So it sounds like I'll be here on Thursday the 11th.
Okay. Not necessarily. We can still...
She needs it today.
Right, well, no, but I could... Technically, on a special, I could post as late as, that Monday, but I don't really want to go that late. I'd rather post on Friday.
We will start drafting that today, Wendy.
That will help. Thank you.
And through the chair, is it the board's preference to have the letter brought back to the board's signature, for the chair's signature, or since it's coming back?
My preference on the Scott was to get it out as quickly as we could and for the chair to sign the board approval.
And I apologize, when was the date of the special board meeting again? November 16th.
Yeah, at 1 o'clock.
And your preference would be to have that letter out prior to that? This week.
It's urgent right now.
Yes. We can certainly, if that is possible, certainly.
If you think you've gotten sufficient direction from the board to be able to draft something, I would ask that a motion be made and the board approve, basically approving a letter on behalf of the board that Elizabeth's going to be drafting pursuant to the direction.
Okay. That's my motion.
Second.
Anything on?
For further discussion, quickly.
Yes.
Mr. Parker, do you know what the flow is on the Shasta currently? I don't know if you were looking at that or not.
I can look it up. If the motion makers would amend it, if the minimum flows are being met for the Shasta, we want to include that. The staff can look at that and say this being met. I hate to lose a week.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's not selfish to say that. Okay. I hate to lose a week.
And that's part of the direction that I wrote down here. Okay. Yes. Sure. If the Shasta is being met, we will include that in the letter as well, Supervisor Cobbsett and Supervisor Chris. That's part of the direction that I received.
And just for clarification, that's the letter going out prior to coming back on the 16th?
Yes, it is. And depending on what Shasta River flows are, we may not need to, well, we may not
we
need
may
to
have
bring
to
up,
delay until.
But bring, yes.
Until that reaches that threshold.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, it hasn't been met. Don't hold up Scott Valley letter.
Yeah. Wendy.
All righty. Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobbsett?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Help?
Aye.
Thank you.
There's a hand up. I don't know if it's on this side.
I would take public comment and see if it changes your mind in any way.
Okay. Caller online, if you have a comment on this topic.
Yeah, can you hear me? Good morning again. It's with Blaise Simpson.
Yes.
Yeah. With regard to the water in the Scott Valley, I think looking forward with some vision, if the Klamath dams are removed, we lose Iron Gate and Copco dams. Those dams have been critical to flush the Klamath River in August to September. Every year we take our winter water that's held back here in these lakes up here, and we use that water to flush those rivers, and which has maintained a very robust fishery. Anybody that's been up here lately below Iron Gate Dam can see the fishing guides and the trailers are lining the river on Copco there. because it's so robust right now. If we lose these dams and we're unable to flush these rivers in August and September, they will be looking to Scott Valley for water to flush the river, because there is no excess water coming down from the upper Klamath in August and September. And I think the board would be well advised to look at this thing with a little vision in trying to protect the ranchers, the irrigators, who are trying to make a third cutting in August, September, and have livestock demands for water. This is a pretty important point, because if the dams do come out, that day will come very quickly. And that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Through the chair.
Yes, sir.
I think that was addressed. I mean, that's been front and center for this board for as long as I've been on there, for 15 years, that concern. But I think last week the question came up, and I think the water board indicated that the Scott and the Shasta would not come under this scheme if there was needed water future, and dam removal did occur. Now, I don't know that I would take that as the gospel, but it is interesting that they did try to caveat that comment, that, you know, but that has been, you know, this board's concern from the very beginning, is there's nowhere else to get water.
They did admit that on the record.
Yeah.
Yes. So, Wendy, did we take a vote?
We did.
We took a vote, so unless a new comment goes, you want to give additional instructions, you can move forward.
I believe the comment's more related to general water management of the Scott, and not specifically this curtailment currently, which is what this urgency item is about. So, with that, I'm going to go to closed session.